Comic Book Club News gives you the comic book news you need to know first thing in the morning every weekday in the form of digestible 3 to 5 minute long podcasts. Comic Book Club News recaps breaking news stories from Marvel, DC Comics, and beyond, Monday through Friday. New episodes drop 6 a.m. ET in the Comic Book Club News feed, so they're ready for you when you're ready for the day. Comic Book Club News. You hear it second or third, possibly fourth. Down, and he saw a lot of brothers there, and he said, "Let there be sisters." And lo, the sisters did rise up. This is American Godcast, and I am Alex.
Wow. What a deep understanding of biblical history.
What are your names?
Let's see. I'm Brother
You're
Justin.
Toothless James.
Yeah.
I'm Pete.
And we're going to be talking about Sister Rising, the latest episode of American Gods. Requisite spoiler warning here. We're going to pretty much jump right into it and sift through all the big things that happened in this episode. So go watch it on the Stars app or Stars on your Prime Video plugin or wherever you prefer to watch Stars. Go do that. Also, if you're listening to these in order as they come out, apologies, this is a little late. It was a holiday weekend. We were pretty chilled out, having a good time.
So chill. Gather around the fire in this cold north region.
So hopefully for the rest of the season, we'll be back on schedule. But this was kind of like, I would say, the second part of last week's episode, right? Or 2 weeks ago at this point.
Yeah, it feels like it's sort of luxuriating in the storytelling a little bit here. Like taking our time, doing some imagery.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, that's what American Gods is known for. But we get a lot of middles of stories here, which I know Pete loves whenever I say that. But we get Technical Boy and Shadow Moon still teaming up. We get a bit of Technical Boy's backstory. I'm sure we'll talk about it in a moment as they go to rescue Bilquis. But of course, Bilquis rescues herself and finds some new understanding by the end of the episode. Meanwhile, Mr. Wednesday, not exactly plan revealed, but he's definitely gunning for Demeter. He is in the institution with her. He is trying to woo her, wine her, and dine her by being crazy, I guess. But it's a little unclear by the end of the episode. Maybe he does, in fact, have some feelings for Demeter beyond his usual con games. But I guess we'll have to see there.
Well, it's like the end of Meet the Parents. Like, you learn that that Robert De Niro does, he likes his family.
That you can milk anything? Is that what you were talking about?
Just watching this episode.
Can you milk me? I have nipples.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard you do that many times. And it's getting to the point where I think you want me to milk you. Like, are you in pain? Are you in pain?
Here's the thing. You know, you ever see those tweets where people are like, what are you going to do whenever you get the vaccine? First thing I'm doing, running to Philadelphia, Pete's going to milk me.
Oh, my God.
Who's thirsty?
Not even going to take a train or a car. I'm just going to run all the way there.
Well, let me know because I want to taste. I want to sip.
Oh, boy.
I say that because the actress who plays Demeter is from Meet the Parents, right?
Yep.
Oh, okay. All right. I like how that sentence ended. Because the actress who plays Demeter is milked often, is what I thought, or something.
There's a lot of familial scenes in this episode that I was like, oh, yes. Okay, I was having flashbacks.
Meanwhile, Laura Moon is making her way across the country with Mad Sweetie's Ashes. She stops off in Cairo at Mr. Ibis's place, kind of teams up with Salim a little bit, which is fun. And yeah, there's your episode.
Well, don't forget, it was a lighter episode. It turns into Ocean's 13 for a little bit.
Sure.
It's interesting that you chose Ocean's 13 to reference of those three movies.
That's right.
Very interesting.
Real quick, what's the plot of Ocean's 13, Pete?
The same of every plot. It's like slick cuts Two people doing bad things to cool music.
All right, you got me. That is the plot of Ocean's 13.
That's a win. I mean, to be fair, like, that was clearly like a Soderbergh ref, and yeah. I thought it was great.
Well,
I want overall, that show. I would watch that show.
Overall, I think I'm starting to get back on board with American Gods with last week, it was 2 weeks ago, but the last episode and this episode, they're fun. I'm having fun watching this show again, where it got kind of mired at the beginning of the season, but it really seems to be picking up now, and that's great.
I agree. Like, it is fun, and the way they're able to just shift wildly between the different characters and stuff that's happening is so good, and I don't even mind. I feel like we talked in the past about how there's so much Shadow Moon must be traveling vast distances that we never see because he's always with different people. I don't mind that at all. I like that he's sort of our guide through all these different things. The team up with Technical Boy and finding Bilquist and all that stuff I thought was so great, so well done. Bilquist sort of getting her power back in a new way that we've seen in this series was great. And then you get to see him do all this other fun Soderbergh stuff. Like, it felt like multiple episodes of TV, and even though it was one, and I didn't feel disjointed to me.
Pete, you leaned into your microphone as if you were about to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I really had a lot of fun. I really liked the kind of stomp moment, you know, where that was a lot of fun. But the ending got me very mad, and I'm a little worried about where things are going. But
interesting.
I knew it.
That made me so happy.
You stay away from him. What the fuck are you doing? You got your magical leprechaun. You don't need to ruin Shadow Moon's life.
Well, hold on. So, end of the episode. Great moment. I loved how this was shot. Shadow comes back to Lakeside. Things are very weird in Lakeside. They seem to be falling apart very quickly. Everybody's kind of fighting. It feels like whatever the idyllic town was there is sort of starting to crumble apart.
Is the car even still on the ice? We don't know.
This is a big question. What's going on with the clunker?
And they say that before the ice breaks in a lakeside town like this, the tension builds amongst the population until the ice goes out. So I think that may be part of it here. I grew up on a lake, definitely. And I was tense as fuck in the winter. Oh, also, it was very cold and, no sun, really.
The only lake I ever lived by was the Atlantic Ocean.
Nice. Harder to ice skate on that fucker, though, right?
But every year, we'd go across to England, skate right over. Skate right over to England.
Hello, Alex.
It's me again. Give me some Tim Tabs. No, those are Australia. That was a bad reference. Anyway, end of the show, though. What I was saying was there's this great shot. Shadow sits down at the bar, orders some food, asks what's going on, and then somebody brings a pasty over to another customer, says, hey, every new customer gets a free pasty, and it turns out it's Laura, and she says, hey, long time, and that's where we end. Great.
So
great
good.
Moment.
Loved this reveal. Nope. I mean, believe me, I'm a Laura Mad Sweeney guy. In my heart, but I thought this was just such a great reveal, and you really feel their relationship in this moment, which is something we haven't felt really at all on this show, right?
What relationship? What are you talking about? You shouldn't be feeling anything. The two strangers to each other shouldn't be anything more.
Oh, yeah, you believe that once you die and come back to life, that ends all marriages and stuff, right?
Yep.
That's how it works.
Till death do you part, and she did die. So yeah.
I don't know, though, to bring that up when you first see, like, you first see your dead wife is now reincarnated to be like, not married. I'm dating my landlord.
Well, Pete, the cool thing about that is now that she's back and their marriage is null and void, they can get married again. And we can have a Laura Moon Shadow Moon wedding by the end
of the
season.
That's not funny.
That's fun. God. Planning a wedding is fun. I've done it. Alex has done it. Pete, question mark. You know, we don't know.
Pete works half time as a wedding planner. So
that's what I mean. I'm talking about your wedding planning business, Pete. I'm not trying
part time.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to cast
any.
Here's
what we're going to do. You're going to drive up in a car that I call Black Betty. It's going to be piled trunk to front with cheese sticks. You get there. The Mountain Dew shooting everywhere in fountains right over you as you go up to the altar. The priest says, "You married? Get out of here." And that's it.
Wow. Excuse me, sir. You're the wedding planner? The humans aren't here. You're just marrying these two cars? What is this about for you?
What I like about this last moment, beyond it just being a great cliffhanger for the next episode, is we have these characters in very different places right now, like we've been joking about. But Laura coming back to life, finding a new purpose and focus. Shadow Moon seems so much more settled. Now in Lakeside, he's more understanding of his place in the world. So what do they mean to each other? That's
hopefully
going to be
nothing.
Exciting. Even if it is nothing, but it's an exciting conversation to have in the next episode.
Just
a flat no, right,
yeah,
Pete?
That's right. Why have that when you could be, I don't know, maybe showing us some sweet cars? I mean, we saw the protege was on top of a sweet Lincoln. We got a nice shot of the Lincoln going by. That was nice.
Maybe you just want to watch, like, you should go watch, you know what, Traffic. And I don't even mean the movie. I mean just lowercase t Traffic. Because it's what you want. And I don't know why you're watching the show where the characters are interesting and then when they come together, it's exciting. But all you really want to watch is a couple of wheels spin by.
I don't want to see characters get together or be together after one character disrespected another character. You know what I mean? You want to go live a different life? Go do that. Be happy with your leprechaun. Don't fuck up my shit.
Wow. Be happy with your box of ashes.
Yeah.
By the way, Pete, I appreciate, I know you. We talk about your wedding planning business, but your t-shirt business where you sell go be with your leprechaun and don't fuck up my shit. It's really taking off.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
It's good stuff. All right. I wanted to jump back to the beginning of the episode because I loved how this kicked off. We were at the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago, 1893. I guess we find the origin of Technical Boy. I don't know if he was a god at that point or if he was a human and became a god, potentially.
Yeah, it was the steampunk robot that turned him into a god.
Well, this, if what this episode was trying to tell us is something that's going to go on forward as an idea, it made me think that the new gods are like not real, or they're like inherent failures, or inherently not as powerful as the regular gods. Because we see the story of him here is that it's all fake and he doesn't, it just can't function without this clinging to this falsehood.
I loved it. I mean, I loved the magnificent Maximilian. I thought that was a great character. I love the callback, which I didn't expect later on, that when Technical Boy feels defeated, him running back to this crate and hiding in there.
It's
the
a zappy
whole way bus. It was filmed was great. I did have one question, though, because we don't have, unfortunately, Mr. Nancy around to narrate the show anymore. Who is narrating at this point? Who is the narrator? Because somebody is telling these stories, and I can't quite tell who it was. Maybe it's Mr. Ibis, but I'm not 100% sure.
He definitely feels like the narrator. He feels very powerful in this episode, and is sort of like, you idiots, go do your shit. I'm staying here.
So let me get this straight. You liked the Maximilian stuff where he just kind of bullied the new tech god. You thought that was cool. You were stroking
Pete,
the mustache and being like,
Can I tell you what I actually love? I love that at least once a month on some podcast, we have to explain what the word like means. So in this case, what I'm saying is I appreciated how the sequence is done, not I liked a magician bullying a boy.
Well, because that's what you said. So I just wanted to give you a chance to clarify.
Thanks for holding my nuts to the fire.
Well, nuts. Yikes. Where did you grow up? I like when magicians bully children. That's what we're talking about. I like when they're like, pick a card, kid. Yeah, I'm going to tell you what that card is. It's the Queen of Hearts, idiot. That's magic.
This whole sequence is really well done. All the stuff with Technical Boy is really well done. It was a little ridiculous that all the stuff with Shadow and Technical Boy did not pan out at all with Bilquis. It led to a fun moment, but it also was like, all this buildup for not much.
Shadow Moon was like, well, the reason I'm here, and then he just like turns around and he's gone.
What I liked about that, though, was like technical boy was like, I can't hang with her. She's got her power. She's mm-hmm. powerful now. Because I think, and this is just my interpretation, but I feel like Bilquis for these all these seasons, it's like, I don't know quite what I am. Maybe I'm going to be with the new gods and just be this sort of like new sex god and goddess and all that. And then in this episode, we just see her find her true old god power. Mm-hmm. And it's undeniable. And I think that's why Technical Boy just runs off. Because he's like, I can't even mm-hmm. hang with that. And it feels like all the new god's powers aren't core human values. They're like fads, mm-hmm. like technology.
So you're talking about like during that trailer for Stomp, that's when she got her. Is that what you're talking about?
That is what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about? Are you talking about when she was commuting with the old African gods?
Yeah, I'm talking about.
I wouldn't
like,
call that Stomp. That feels a little derogatory.
Okay, I just felt like
Pete loves Stomp.
It was. Yeah, made me miss. You know, seeing things in New York City, especially in like.
Oh man, you know, as like a live shows. New Yorker, one of my favorite things is going out to see Stomp or Blue Bad Group or like eating at the Olive Garden in Times Square. Top three, right there.
There's no more indie theater in New York than seeing Stomp.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, it was nice to see her get her swagger back, and it was hysterical when like they showed up and she was like, "Oh, are you here to rescue me?" I thought that was great.
Yeah,
it was great, Pete. I thought you would specifically call out how good the fries Bilquis was eating.
Oh yeah, that was a fun line.
It was a fun line,
guys.
She still got her sense of humor.
Fries are worth it. Okay,
I will say I don't love it.
Down, you know, just have some fries. It'll make you feel better.
I don't love a tower of fries. I'm like, because then it's inaccessible, first off.
Yeah. Wait, and what are you talking, what's not accessible about a tower of fries?
It's hard. You got to come into the top. That's, yeah. I never enter a tower that way.
What?
I always come into the bottom.
So.
What are you, in a helicopter? I want fries just splayed out.
You drive your car from one tower to the other, like in a Furious 7.
Wow. That's right.
Furious.
That's what I do.
I'm just saying a tower is a difficult container. It doesn't maximize.
I agree with you. There's always a bunch that are stuck at the bottom. You got to take it, dump it onto your plate. Just put it on the plate. Cut out a step there, you know? I'm a busy man.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't waste time dumping my tower of fries.
You exclusively eat food in tower form, Pete?
Who cares how it comes? It's fries. It doesn't matter if it's in a tower, a tube, a fucking tub. It's tub. Fries. You're winning.
How was your cereal like tower tub. This morning, Pete? Very difficult to eat. Very hard to eat.
Oh, boy. So let's see. We've pretty much covered Bilquis there. Let's talk about who else? What else should we talk about in this episode?
We could talk a little bit about
Mr. Wednesday, I guess, Wednesday. Right?
Yeah. And Demeter. Like, are you saying you buy it? You buy his feelings here?
I kind of buy it a little bit just because there's towards the end of the storyline, in this episode at least, there's a moment where Mr. Wednesday is left alone. Everybody else has left the scene. And it feels like he crumples a little bit. You see him a little bit softer, thinking about Demeter, thinking about everything else. Maybe I'm being suckered by him. Of course, I think, of course, at the end of the day, he is going to be working at Angle, and he will betray everybody, and he'll get what he wants about it. But I do think in this one case, he's going to feel kind of bad about it at the same time.
Right. Wow. So he's in love just for this one moment.
It was weird because it did seem like at times he was in love, and then he was like, oh, you know, you have a bunch of wives. And then it was like, you know, but then he was like, this used to be my wife. And then it was like, oh, maybe he does care. But yeah, I feel like after that speech she gave to Shadow Moon, where she was like, let me really look at you, and then kind of had some words, I feel like after that she was like, I don't want a part of any of this bullshit anymore.
Do you, not do you, I really like the champagne speech. I thought that was really good, just comparing love to champagne. I thought that was a nice little metaphor there. What do you think she wants at this point, Demeter? Just to be left alone? I guess maybe on the other end, why do you think Wednesday needs her?
I mean, I don't want to say too much in case any plot points we know from the book are really folded in here, but it does, the moment where Demeter, Shadow, and Wednesday are together there, it felt like a family moment. And that feels purposeful and something that Wednesday is manipulating into place, despite the fact that he feels like he's doing it genuinely, but I think he is manipulating that into place for his other purposes that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of like he wants to let her know that she's being kind of swindled a little bit and show that to her. And then, you know, who knows what will happen after that. But I think he heard about the way what's going on with her and how she doesn't have access to her money. And he's willing to put a stop for that. And sure, yeah, he wants a cut of that, you know. You got to get paid for your work. But, you know, I don't know if he's doing it for good reasons.
But this isn't about the money. There's some God reason here.
God of the old folks' homes. You know, you got to have that on your side if you're going to go into war.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely what's going on here. Exactly. How are you feeling about Cordelia this episode?
She's very cool.
She is cool. But
you're talking about the protege?
The protege.
I like that you use the word protege for her, Pete.
Well, that's how Wednesday refers to her in front of Moonshadow, which I thought maybe would have caused some kind of riff. I think maybe he was fishing for a little something there, and Moonshadow's like, nah, I'm over you, bro. I thought the protege moment where she was on that sweet Lincoln and was like, do I need to apply for a new job here? Should I be, you know, is he completely out of his gourd? I feel like I like the her and Moonshadow stuff back and forth. And I think that, like, as the eps go on, they're going to continue to kind of grow that relationship.
Yeah, I mean, them as a 1-2 punch duo in this episode, I thought was great. Like, another show I would watch in this episode.
I was very surprised, given the title of the episode being Sister Rising, and we've speculated that Cordelia is another one of Mr. Wednesday's kids. I was really surprised that reveal didn't come in this episode. Maybe it's not coming. Maybe we're looking into it too deeply. But certainly, versus his relationship with his landlord, which is sweet and cute, and they're flirting, and she's been thinking about him, there is not flirting going on between Shadow and Cordelia.
Co-workers.
And in my mind, the only way that would happen is if they're brother and sister. That's it.
That's the only way you don't flirt with someone?
Exactly.
Wow. That's
cool.
That's
right, you little cuties?
Oh, my God. What a sad
Here we go. This is what we've been waiting for. All that talk of milking you really got you into this. All that talk of milking you. That's what my family always says at family reunions. That's why we don't talk about it anymore.
But do you guys want to talk a little bit more about the Lincoln? Because it was the soft top with a sunroof option, which, you know, I mean, you don't see that really. So it was really nice to see it in such great shape.
Are you trying to sell cars? Or because I don't hear you talk about cars a lot. You don't own a car, do you?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do? Why don't you ever talk about the car that you own? Let's hear about that car.
Well, it's not on a TV show right now, so that's why we don't talk about it.
Oh, you gotta put it out there, dude. Send it on some auditions.
Yeah, you're exactly. Right, right. You gotta. Yeah. What is your car? Triple threat? Like, how's it sound? What's its choreography? We gotta work
it
on
it. Drives. It parks.
Yeah.
That's it.
What's the horn like? Is it just honk, or is it like?
Yeah, it's more of a jalopy sounding horn. Yeah,
you have to work if you want to work. You have to work. It's a job. It's show business. It's not show fuck around. It's show business.
Oh wow, wow!
Before we start to wrap up here, what other moments do you guys want to call out from the episode? Any other thing that stuck out to you? I'll mention one of my favorite lines of the episode is when Mr. Ibis is saying he will give them his car to Salim and Laura. She says, either you're very generous, you want me to leave, and there's just a slight pause, and then he says, yes.
Yeah. Which
made me laugh. I thought it was funny.
Be a fun curmudgeon in this whole episode.
Mm-hmm. Pete, anything you want to call out?
Just kind of paging through the notes here. It was... I like the whole, calling it number 37. That was fun. Like, you know, they were old school grifters. You know, that was kind of a fun bit. But yeah, I think overall it was a solid ep. I'm a little nervous about moving forward. I do like her with the leprechaun. I just don't want her to fuck with other people. You know what I mean?
I love seeing Laura Moon in this. She's fun. She's living. She's full of life. I want to see where this goes in any capacity. Is she going to bring that leprechaun back to life? Because leprechaun's dead. Her ex-husband, yeah, alive.
But she's got the coin. I mean, you know, she can make some magic.
You mean you throw the coin in the dusty old leprechaun and hope it pops up?
I mean, I got a little nervous when Salim had the coin in his hand. I thought maybe he was going to wish for his djinn or something, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't seem to be glowing.
That's true.
During that scene. So I don't know how much magic is necessarily left in that thing. I also, on that note, we didn't really talk about this, but Salim talking to her about there could be nothing closer than having Mad Sweetie's blood in your veins, mm-hmm, was very sweet and very American Gods, like a very sort, yeah, of dark but beautiful metaphorical thing going on there. I thought that was very nice.
I did like Salim being like, so you died. What happened? Like, tell me, what the fuck happened when you after you die?
Yeah.
That was good. It was good to finally get confirmation of that. That definitely makes me feel better.
Me too. Yeah, but what happens to cars when they die, Pete? And don't start crying. I know before we started taping, you were really upset about the clunker. But
mm-hmm. Have you ever been to a car funeral? They're really beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pete's catered a few.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I honestly think there was more plot about Pete in this podcast episode than there was in the episode of American Gods.
Before we wrap up here, let's talk about who was worthy of your worship this episode. Pete, you first. Who was most worthy of your worship?
Who? I'm going to have to say Demeter. I really like how she's kind of turning Wednesday into maybe something good. This is the first time we've kind of ever seen Wednesday act right. So it'll her kind of like who's playing who, I really appreciate it. So I'm going to say I was really impressed with her in this ep.
Justin, what about you?
Got to give it up for Bilquis in this episode. Like, great Bilquis episode, just to see the transformation. It felt like it paid off her character for the whole run of the series and actually helped to make sense of some of the more wandering choices they've made. So I'm here for Bilquis.
I got to give it up to Technical Boy in this episode. Always a fun character, but I really like the sequences with him. I thought seeing him crying and scared in his box was a really fascinating place to put him at the end. Yeah. And just overall, as we talked about, I like watching magicians bully kids. So it was just a pleasure to see that happen to him. If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Do Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We'll chat with you about American Gods. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. At A Godcast on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, keep on praying.
Classic church sign off.
Whoo, keep it praying.